Shkaya Chosami. Thank you very much. I'll repeat what we said in the beginning of the shiur, that this is Li'ili Nishmas, Leah Bas Charna. I don't have her father's name, but Rav Alex's grandmother who passed away this morning. Okay. We're starting on a series of shiurim on Lefnim Mishuras Hadin, or not on Lefnim Mishuras Hadin, depending on how you look at it. Lefnim Mishuras Hadin, literally the idea that a Jew is expected to go beyond what the law demands of him, and we'll talk about what that means, in what cases, where it applies, where it doesn't apply, all as an outgrowth of the last Gemara in our Perek on Pei Gimel Amid Aleph, a story in which one of the Amoraim, we'll see who it is, seems to be entirely in the right in, first of all, requiring damages from workers who destroyed property that they were working on, and number two, refusing to pay them for their work, and yet he is told not to demand payment for the damage, and to, in fact, pay them their wages. That's going to be our basic story. And what I want to know, among other things, are our Gemara is actually not going to call this Lefnim Mishuras Hadin, going beyond the letter of the law. Rashi is the one who's going to say it. So what is the relationship between our case and Lefnim Mishuras Hadin as a principle? That's number one. Number two, when this Amora is told that he is supposed to not demand damages from them and that he is supposed to pay them, is that a psak? Is that actually a halachic requirement? Is it binding? And if so, then why would Rashi call it Lefnim Mishuras Hadin, beyond the letter of the law, that actually is the law? And parenthetically, in case you think that this is somehow like an esoteric case, someone's carrying someone else's barrels, you know, as we're going to see, I actually came across a story involving Rav Nevensal with a practical application of this. And we'll get back to this story, not this week, but in a future week, God willing. But I'll tell you the story. The story goes that Rav Nevensal hired a car to take him to a wedding. And he said, I want to make sure that I'm going to get there by the chuppah. That was his stipulation. I need to get there by the chuppah. He reiterated it. The driver said he understood. And he left it to the driver to figure out the timing. The driver tells him when he's going to pick him up. Driver comes, picks him up. And sure enough, driver gets lost along the way. There's some problem on the road. And they don't make it in time for the chuppah. And so Rav Nevensal turns to his talmidim, who are accompanying him in the car. And he says, so do I have to pay him or not? And long story short, he applies our Gemara to suggest that he has to pay him just like you have to pay the workers who broke your property, even though they didn't do what they were supposed to do and he didn't get what he was supposed to get. But I'm getting ahead of myself because I haven't even read the case out loud yet. I'm just trying to show that it has practical relevance. Finally, the question will be, in addition to asking why doesn't our Gemara call Lefnim Mishuras Hadin, why does Rashi? And the question of, is this in fact Din or is it Lefnim Mishuras Hadin? At what point does Lefnim Mishuras Hadin become Din? The third question is, if this is in fact a halachic requirement that you do have to pay them and that you can claim damages, in which circumstances will it be binding? How far does it go? There will be a little more of halacha than iyun, I think, in general, in the flow of these shiurim. But I wanted to start off with a nice icebreaker source. If you look at source Aleph from Yitzhak Alevi Herzog, a very nice piece from an article that he published. Well, he didn't publish it. It was published in Tchumen long after he had passed away. It was published in Tchumen in 1986, so he had already passed away decades earlier, but it's called Batei Adin B'Yisrael. He refers you to Micha's classic pasuk, in which he says, what does Hashem demand of you? Asos mishpat ve'avas chesed ve'atznei alechasim elokecha. Practice justice, love chesed, and walk privately with Hashem your God. Right? Those are the three expectations of Micha. So usually we read them as a sort of triumvirate. These three midos, these three attributes are attributes that people should pursue. But he views it as a hierarchy. He says, Sikum hayahadut shomicha hamorashti hu mudrag. He says, this summary of Judaism, if you remember the Gemara at the end of Makos, Micha sums up Judaism in just these three principles, he says, it's actually mudrag. It is a hierarchy. Shalosh malos hein zo al gabe zo. It's one above the other. Asos mishpat zehadin. He says, doing mishpat is din. L'mala mimenu avas chesed, higher than that is love of chesed. That, he says, is lifnim mishuras hadin. That's going beyond the letter of the law, beyond what is expected of you. V'lo od, she'ein hayadus mistapekes b'midas ha'chesed b'maseh bilvad, he dareshes gamas ha'chesed shevalev, avas chesed. He said, it's not enough that a person practices chesed, they have to love chesed. Avas chesed, hachivetz hapnimi lasos chesed, and then higher than that, hatsmei alechasim elokecha liyos tamid chadur mehahakara hapnimit shemaloch al haaretz kevodo. For a person to constantly be filled inside with the sense that the universe is ultimately the kavod of Hashem, everything in the universe is the kavod of Hashem, and it's the vaday shelo hadin hu maroma ideal shel yadut el lefnimi shuras hadin. He goes on to say, din is not the full image of what Judaism wants, but lifnim mishuras hadin, to go higher than that. I just thought that's a really nice source to start our discussion about what exactly the expectations are of parties who have legal rights. Do we expect them to forgive those rights? Okay, so let's take a look at source B's. This is our Gemara. Rava Bar Bar Hanan. So I should note, as we start this Gemara, the names have been changed to protect the guilty. By which I mean, if you look at this as it appears in different sources, you will find different names. So it may be Rava Bar Bar Hanan, it may be Rava Bar Bar Hanan, you get all sorts of different, but closely related names for the figures in this. Rava Bar Bar Hanan, Tavru Lehanu Shekuloi Chavisa Dechamra. Rava Bar Hanan had barrels. He had porters who he had hired to carry the barrels. These are barrels of wine. And they broke the barrels. Shaka liglimayu. He takes their cloaks. Payment for the damage. Asu amru l'rav. They came to Rav. And again, different editions have different people answering this question. Our Gemara, our edition, says it's Rav. Okay. They told Rav, hey, not only did he not pay us, but he actually took our cloaks. Amar le havlu uglimayu. Rav says, Rav Bar Bar Hanan, give them their cloaks. Amar lei, dina hachi. He says, is that the law? Amar lei, in. He says, yes. The pasuk says, the pasuk in Mishlei Perek Beis, leman teleich b'derech tovim, so that you will walk in the path of the good. Fine, you have lugli mayu. He gives them their cloaks. Amar lei, but the porters aren't done. They said, ani yanan, we're poor people. V'techinam kol yom v'kafinan, we worked all day long. We're hungry, v'les l'nidi, and we have nothing to eat. Amar lei, zil havagrayu, he says, pay them. Not only do you not get money for your barrels, but you have to pay them for breaking your barrels. Amar lei, dina hachi. He says, really? Are you serious? That's the law? Amar lei, in. He says, yes. V'orchos tzadikim tishmor, the end of that pasuk that he started with, l'man telech b'derech tovim, you shall guard the path of tzadikim. That is the Gemara. So now, pausing there for a second. What's your impression out of this Gemara? Is Rav saying to him that this is din, or is he telling him this is lifnim mishuras hadin? And what's your basis for saying so?
If you look at the literal words of the Gemara, he asks him, is this the din? And he says, yes. So that seems pretty straightforward.
Right? That's certainly one way to look at it, is he asked him, is this the law? He says, this is the law. In which case, it's not lifnim mishuras hadin, but rather, this is actually the law. Leave aside the wording of the Gemara for a second. Can anyone actually believe that this is the law? I mean, right. Well, so if you look at the case itself, you look at it and say, what kind of pasuk is that? you have a pasuk in Mishlei to tell me that this is the din? And not only that, but like, look at the message of the pasuk. Tovim, chasidim, tzadikim, what is it? What is the wording? Tovim and tzadikim. That doesn't sound like a halachic pasuk. It's not a law we're familiar with. But even just logically, before you even get to analyzing the text of it, Rav Nevensol with his driver, right? I hire somebody. I hire a plumber. I say to the plumber, I have a problem. There's a leak in my kitchen. Right? He comes in. By the time he's done, I have to replace the floor of the kitchen with all the water that he let in there, as well as the ceiling for the floor below, because it all went through because he completely botched the job and didn't even fix the leak. It's still running. You're going to really tell me I have to pay him? What are you talking about? What kind of world are you operating in? no one does this. But he said Dina Hachi, and he said in. He said yes. So, yeah.
He's saying there are two levels of din. He's saying there's a level of din for the Hamun Am and a level of din for people who are Tovim and Tzadikim.
Oh.
You have a different set of din.
So Rabbi Yeris suggests that he's saying Dina Hachi because of who you are. That's an idea that I definitely want to come back to. We're not looking at the clock. We're not going to make it in today. But that's an idea that I definitely want to come back to. The idea that there are different rules for different people. Wow, is that a loaded idea? That's going to get us into all sorts of trouble. But theoretically, yeah, you, lucky you. You are Tovim and Tzadikim. Pay up. That's essentially what it sounds like you're saying. So if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says it is lefnim mishuas hadin. Rashi in source Gimel, on our Gemara, the pasuk that says leman telich b'derech tovim, that you go in the path of the tovim, lefnim mishuas hadin. Beyond the letter of the law, beyond the line drawn by the law, we will see, God willing, I think still today, that Tosfos disagrees and does not seem to think that this is lifnim mishuas hadin, but that is shitas Rashi. But I want to first talk about the story. So let's just get the story straight. In our version of the story, it's Rabba Bar Bar Hanan, it's an Amora talking. And the person who's answering him is Rav. And the porters are Aniyim. They're needy people. Take a look at source Dalet, please, which is the Rishalmi's version of the story. Because this will be especially a problem for Rabbi Yeris' explanation of the story. Rabbi Yeris understands that we're talking Rabba Bar Bar Hanan. Ah, okay. Tovim, Tzadikim, absolutely. Look at this version of the story. Tani Rabbi Nechemia. Rabbi Nechemia taught the following. Kadar Masar Kadru Lebarnosh. A Kadar is a person who makes pots. He gave his pots to some guy. Barnosh, some guy. Tavrin, he broke them. Orim Gulsei. And he took something from him to make, as payment. Where's the cloak, something else, doesn't matter. He took something from him as payment for the damages. Asa gabe Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina. The person who he had given the pots to goes to Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina. Amarle and says to him, Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina says to him, Ezel emor le leman telech bederech tovim. You go tell the kadar, you go tell the potter, this pasuk, leman telech bederech tovim. Azal va'amrlei, he went and told it to him, v'yoev gulsei, and he gave it back. Amrlei, yavlach agrach. But now, Rabbi Yosi Hanina takes the initiative. He says, tell me, did he pay you? Amrlei lo, he says, no. Amrlei, zil v'amrlei, v'archos tzadikim tishmor. He says, go back and tell him you have to guard the path of the righteous. Azal amrlei, he went and he told him, v'yoev le agrei. And he paid him for the work. Same story, and yet not the same story. Right? You see the clear-cut differences in this story. It's not an Amora at all. Who did it? It was a potter. And yet, the psak is the same psak. We don't have the Dina Hachi back and forth. Right? That's also missing in this conversation. But it may show us, if this is Lefnim Mishuas Hadin, that Lefnim Mishuas Hadin isn't specifically about where you're an Amora. It isn't specifically about where... Whoops. Hang on. I just hit a button. The problem of writing notes while you're giving shiur on a Zoom. It isn't only about it being an Amora, and it isn't about where the person who's being harmed, the potter or the porter or whatever, is needy. We don't know anything about him being needy. He didn't say he's hungry. He didn't say he's poor and he's been working all day long. That didn't even figure into the conversation. So that's really important. We're going to have to come back to that next week, but I want to show you here, in terms of the mechanics of the case, you can't take the Bavli version as a given. Ezra notes in the chat from the Kaftar of Ferach the idea that maybe Rabbi Nechemia was the potter. Okay.
That's a good point. Tani
Rabbi Nechemia Kader. Tani Rabbi Nechemia, yeah, the problem is that's not the way Yerushalmi tends to work. He's working with a different version. His version is Rabbi Nechemia Havakader Masar Kadri.
Right.
It's a different edition.
That was for you, Rabbi Yeris.
So the last question that I want to ask, just I've been given very little time to work with here, which I don't blame you for at all, Ryan Bergman, but I want to make sure I at least get the story in, is this doesn't follow what we know should be happening. This isn't the way this is supposed to work. The way it's supposed to work is the following. I have property. I give it to someone to work on. He breaks it. At that point, one of two things happens. Either he pays me for it, or he swears that it wasn't because he was careless, and at that point, he's exempt from responsibility. That's what's supposed to happen. Neither of those happened here. No one made him swear. Why is there no Shmua? So if we had time, I would discuss it more, but I just want to make sure to get in this point. Three different shitos as to why there's no Shmua here. Ramban thinks there was a Shmua. If you look at Ramban in Source Hay, he says, Shokav mimayu shalo yivrachu. He didn't take the cloak as payment for the damages. He took the cloaks to keep them from running away. Vasa kame de Rava bahadayu. He thinks it's Rava, not Rav. They came to Rava with these guys, Ladina, for judgment. Ipashu, ishagu bechavona, ibamakum roesha yishalmu. He says, either they were careless, in which case they have to pay, or they broke it intentionally, or there was somebody watching, and that person saw that it was their fault, and therefore they should pay. Vimlav, sheyishbu kimas nisen. And if not, then they should swear. That's what was going on. Va'amalei Rava miyad, and Rava said, "Havlu chimayu, give them the cloaks." Va'amalei dina hachi delo yodu lo yishbu klal, and that was what Rava meant when he challenged. He says, "I don't understand. Why don't they have to swear?" So the Ramban believes that there actually was an attempt to get them to swear. Rashi, on the other hand, says, "No, there was no shvua at all because it was pshia." It was careless. Absolutely. That's what's going on in this case. They were careless, and yet you go get damages and you have to pay them. Rashi Zokt at source number 6. Shakuloi, the porters. Nosei Masos, people who are porters, they carry burdens. Vitavrule Shaloba Mako Madron, they broke it, and it wasn't a case where it was on some steep slope, where you'd say that, they could break even if they're not careless. Ubapshia, it was careless. Inami bedigla, or the digla, which is a type of way of carrying things that the Gemara earlier discussed, which is also considered to be a pshia. It had to have been a pshia case. Ramban is ironic here. Ramban says, I don't like Rashi's explanation because Iker Chasim and Asefer, that the Gemara should have said so. But look at what the Ramban said. Ramban's thing also, Gerchasim and Asefer. The Gemara didn't give me his explanation that he was trying to get a Shavuah out of them either. So I'm not so clear on why Rashi is on the hook for Gerchasim and Asefer and the Ramban is not. However, there's a third view, and this is what we'll conclude with. Rabbeinu Hananel, who is quoted in the Rif. This Rif is going to become important for us next week as well. I'll say it outside, but we're going to have to come back to it. Rabbeinu Hananel says explicitly there was no Pshia. There was no Pshia at all. That's his take. It's talking about in context the discussion of when one has to swear, what if there are witnesses, what if there weren't witnesses, and the way he reads the case, there was no Pshia involved at all. So I don't understand. If there was no Pshia involved, then why wasn't there a demand for a Shvuah? He doesn't address it. So Rav Yaron Unger wrote an article that I've been enjoying on the issue of Lifnei Mishuras Hadin in Mishpatei Eretz. He has a couple of things that I'm trying to get in touch with him because I think he has a mistake or two. But overall, it's a very good article. You can find it online. It's called Laman Telech B'Derech Tovim. So he writes in this article that perhaps the Dayan, Rav Avraham, knew that they would rather pay than swear. Especially because it's hard to know whether you were Poshaya or not. They don't want to be on the hook they don't want to swear falsely. Maybe it really was Pshia. So he knew that they weren't going to want to swear, so he jumped it. He simply skipped it. But don't assume. One should not assume that the reason why Rabbeinu Hananel says this, that there was no pshia is because we wouldn't do lefnim mishuras hadin for pshia. Rabbi Unger points this out. You might assume that the reason why Rabbeinu Hananel says there's no pshia is because if there was pshia, we wouldn't take care of them. We wouldn't do lefnim mishuras hadin. He says no. He quotes you a tshuva of the Ma'aril in Source Ches. In a case in which somebody is expected to take care of his family members, even though the fallout that he's dealing with comes from someone's pshia, and the Ma'aril, it's the very end of the tshuva, says you have to do lefnim mishuras hadin, and we will compel you to do lefnim mishuras hadin. That's a topic for another week. V'af ki lefi daiti pasha bo, even though I think that this was pshia, tifarto over al pesha, pasuk in Mishlei also. It is his splendor that he ignores the fact that it was pshia, and he's going to go lefnim mishuras hadin anyway. So in other words, Rav Yaron Unger's point is to say that that Rabbeinu Hananel's position is that there was no pshia, not because we're going lefnim mishuras hadin. We will go lefnim mishuras hadin, even for a posheya. And then why not have them take a shvua? Because he knew they were going to refuse the shvua, and then they would need to pay. He didn't want to go there. He doesn't want them to end up paying. So what we've seen so far is just tip of the iceberg on where we're going. I expect us to use another 2 weeks on this topic of lefnim mishuras hadin. At least a week and a half more, possibly 2 full weeks. But we've seen our basic case. We understand that some of what's going on here, maybe lefnim mishuras hadin, that Shitas Rashi, we'll see, Tosfos disagrees. It may relate to the fact that it's an Amora doing this, but again, Lav Davka, we'll have to see that. And it may relate to the neediness of the recipients, but Lav Davka for that as well. So God willing, we'll pick up from here next Friday. B'linader Matzai Shabbos, I'll send out some Marmakomos for people to see. Shkayach.
Shabbos Shalom.